Hello, it's me, Lily, a frog who lives in a pond and loves to tell stories. It's a well-known fact that there are five types of gnomes: alpine gnomes, who live in the mountains; country gnomes, who live in farms, orchards, vineyards, and fields; forest gnomes, otherwise known as wood gnomes; Arctic gnomes; and, of course, the most well-known variety, the garden variety garden gnome, of which there have been the most sightings by human, not because they are any less clever or elusive than the rest of the gnome varieties, all of which avoid human contact, especially with adults, but because they cohabit with humans in their gardens, and, as such, the garden gnome is simply at a greater risk as he or she goes about his or her daily gnome business in the garden of being spotted out and about in the garden. Garden gnomes have been sighted, glimpsed, sensed, seen, spied, and even photographed in gardens all over the world while going about their day-to-day tasks of gathering stores, supplies, and provisions for winter, of practicing the art of hygge, which is the Danish word for comfortable and cozy living, and of assisting any creatures, great or small, other than humans, who find themselves in need of assistance within the boundaries of the garden in which that gnome presides. This story is about that type of gnome, a garden gnome named Surly. Unlike most gnomes, he never found a mate with which to build a home and raise wee little garden gnomes with. Instead, he lives all on his own in the stump of a honeysuckle tree, where he gathers green beans and borage, Saskatoon berries and corn cobs, potatoes, carrots, and parsnips, dandelions for dandelion root beer, because that is his favorite drink, and all the many herbs and flower essences a gnome needs to stock a gnome apothecary with shelves and jars and containers full of every type of healing remedy, so that, say, when a chickadee calls for help with an injured eye, the gnome can make a solution of sea well root and heal speedy flower to administer with a tiny dropper, no bigger than a hummingbird's beak, while the little birdie rests in a recovery nest inside the old hospital log beside the honeysuckle stump. Or, if a bumblebee cries out that her wings are caught in a sticky pine resin and she cannot fly, the gnome can bring a pot of citrus peel tea and use it to help wash away the resin until the bumblebee's wings are clean and dry and she can fly away to gather more pollen. Or, if an enormous animal like a skunk cries out that he has a runny nose due to seasonal allergies, the gnome can tell the skunk to rest a while under the shade of an ostrich leaf fern, while he goes to his apothecary for nose soothe, eye bright, twinkle foot, and wanderlust blossom, so that soon enough the skunk will feel well. And also, a strong desire to keep traveling away from Surly's garden. Of course, it's such a tremendous amount of work, and Surly couldn't keep track of all that needs to be done every day without his copy of the Great Book, printed on poplar fluff parchment and gilded around the edges of every page with beetle carapace dust and bound in rosewood with ornate details and carvings and calligraphy, entitled The Gnomonomicon. In this great book, there are instructions on how to treat ailments, gather medicinals and provisions, build contraptions such as pumpkin tossers and tomato guillotines, how to make medical supplies such as butterfly wing slings and snail crutches, and there's information on how to construct musical instruments such as a tudier or a gnomalele, and also traditional furniture such as the elaborate gnome steam bath, deep soaker, and sauna system. And, of course, there's a calendar of which days are for work and which are for feasting. And there are folk tales and epic poems and gnome folk songs, too, such as Keep Your Red Hat On and Bathe Your Feet First and dandelions do make the best root beer. Surly knows the Gnomonomicon cover to cover. He consults it every day. He has one of the best stocked apothecaries in any garden and the best stocked pantry, too. It's full of honey pots and seed cakes, rose hip breeze and hazelnut hard cheeses and seed crackers, pickles, preserves, flowers and root vegetables and garden produce. There's herbal teas and tisanes of all kind, and of course, dandelion beer and other root beers too. And that is why on feast days, garden gnomes almost always gather in Surly's garden, bringing what they can to add potluck to the dinner table, and their musical instruments, and their children to trip over, and news from kin, and a chance to share innovations in the gnome sciences once everyone's bellies are full. It's always so noisy and busy and chaotic on feast days, and there's so much cleaning up and restocking to do afterwards, but Surly loves every bit of it. He loves the anticipation of so many visitors, and he loves the quiet afterwards in which he's always grateful to live on his own with no one to disturb his peaceful snoring in his honeysuckle stump home. There are only three chapters in the Gnomonomicon that Surly never ever looks at. The first is how to be a good mate to your beloved gnome partner. Surly does not need to look at that chapter because he doesn't have a beloved that he needs to be good to. And even if he did, he thinks he gets the gist of it anyway, which is to be kind. Surly hardly considers this to be information. It's the same instruction that every instructional in the Gnomonomicon begins with, whether it's instructions for growing hot peppers in cold climates or for helping a frantic fawn get out of a snare. Of course, be kind, followed by the instruction to listen deeply, which sometimes makes sense to Surly, such as when he's gathering honey from wild bees. But listen deeply does not make sense to Surly as good advice when he's making cheese or constructing a rainwater barrel. Come on, listen deeply. Oh, of course. Surly also doesn't need to look at the How to Be a Good Gnome Parent chapter, as with no mate, he has no gnome children to parent, though he has glanced at it and he knows it contains only those two tedious instructions. 1, be kind, and 2, listen deeply. This is confusing to Surly, as he has seen gnome parents keep their children safe and clean and fed, and he's seen them try to teach them how to be calm and polite and patient, and to master difficult tasks, and how to not let their fears and emotions overwhelm them, even though, to Surly, the parents do tend to look a bit tired, and, you know, Surly isn't afraid to say it, frayed around the edges, and he thinks that probably it's more complicated than just 1, be kind, and 2, listen deeply. And he wonders why the Gnomonomicon doesn't have better instructions for parents, such as, don't feed your children chocolate, it makes them hyper. Or, don't let your children get sticky fingers and touch the clean windows in Surly's honeysuckle stump home. And, don't make any noises that are shrill or loud or unpleasant, ever, and just be quiet, for heaven's sake, and don't climb things or break things or make mistakes. Be kind and listen deeply. No wonder it's always so noisy on feast days, with all those little gnome children underfoot. No better instructions for their parents on how to care for them than that. And then there is the chapter titled Fairy Folk in Your Garden. Surly also doesn't need to look at that chapter, because there has never been any fairies in his garden, and he doesn't expect there ever to be. He's pretty sure they either live far away from him, or, even more likely, Nowhere at all, because there is no such thing as fairies. Otherwise, why hasn't he seen any? Probably, thinks Surly, they were just made up, most likely, by all those tired parents to get their noisy children to sit still and be quiet for once as they listen to make-believe stories. So Surly doesn't follow the instructions to prepare fairy formula each spring to feed the baby fairies expected to arrive on the second last weekend of every July. And he doesn't check the flowers for fairy eggs, and he certainly doesn't collect lily petals to make baby fairy pajamas with, or gather dew for infant fairy baths, or collect acorns for baby fairy bassinets, nor does he gather dandelion clock fluff to line the acorn shell bassinets to make them warm and soft and absorbent. He did these things several years in a row, and it was very time-consuming and all for naught, and the fairy formula and lily petal pajamas still sit withered and desiccated on his apothecary shelves. This spring, however, the human who gardens in Surly's garden did bring home a rosemary plant in a clay pot, and she did set it in the backyard. And while Surly did harvest some of the spring needles for teas and medicines, when the human wasn't out and about in her garden, of course, he quite forgot, because he never checks the chapter on fairy folk in your garden, that rosemary is exactly the plant that, if it's found in your garden, baby fairies will fruit in. Imagine Surly's surprise when, walking in the garden in the moonlight, just to see the moonflower blossom and the night pollinators flutter about, he heard crying coming from a potted plant, the potted rosemary plant. At first, Surly cocked his head toward the sound and thought it was just some delicate wind chimes, but as more and more voices added to the sound coming from the rosemary, Surly realized it was the tiny cries of tiny babies. Oh no, thought Surly, and his first impulse was not be kind, nor listen deeply. It was to run back to his honeysuckle, stump home, jump into his bed, hoping to wake up to discover it was all a dream. That's what Surly did. But alas, in the morning, when Surly the gnome tiptoed past the rosemary plant in the clay pot, he heard first a cooing sound, then the tiniest sneeze, then a giggle, then a cry, then more and more and more crying, and then the whole plant began shaking, and fairy dust began to billow out from around the pot. And then there were some more tiny sneezes, and soon a baby fairy dropped down from a flower and into the pot. Surly had never seen fairy dust or a fairy before, but there was no mistaking it. A tiny baby with wings lying atop the soil, surprised by the sudden landing on the ground after having fallen from the flower above and about to burst into tears. Well, Surly knew enough to pick up the baby fairy and to run with it back to his honeysuckle stump home so that, with the baby in one arm, he could open up the Gnomonomicon to the chapter called Fairy Folk in Your Garden. Be kind, it said first of all. Then, listen deeply. Oh, right, right, said Surly, flipping ahead many pages to where it said, how to care for fairy babies. There was a lot to do, the most crucial being to prepare fairy formula from the nectar of a flowering hazelnut bush. Oh, boy. Then collect bluebell flowers to use as baby bottles. Okay, by the time Surly had done that, the baby was crying with hunger, and he was entirely sure he'd heard another fairy baby fall from the rosemary plant. He put the first baby down in his wool sock drawer and ran out to the garden to find, sure enough, there was a second baby. He brought that wee little winged creature inside too and gave her a bit of the formula, and then he put her down into his sock drawer with her sister for a nap. Then he got busy with finding lily petals to make baby fairy pajamas, and gathering dew for infant fairy baths, and finding acorns for baby fairy bassinets, and gathering dandelion clock fluff to line the acorn shell bassinets with. Those acorn shells did make wonderful bassinets. When Surly moved the babies into the bassinets from his sock drawer, he found he could rock the bassinets gently with one foot while leaving his hands free to feed the babies. They went to sleep more quickly if they were rocked, and that gave him time to gather dandelion clock fluff to line the acorn shells and to keep freshening up the bassinets as needed many times a day and always between baths. Of course, Surly was in for a busy month. Fairies fruit in 31s, one fairy baby for each day in the month of May. And by the end of the month, the fairies were eating solid food and making their own fairy clothes from flower petals and making their own fairy musical instruments. And they were dancing in fairy circles in the garden. And while Surly knew it was normal for fairies to fly away from gardens to live in enchanted woods, he had mixed feelings when they left because they were so beautiful and their laughter was like music and everything they touched seemed to get better, so that his lopsided, three-legged stool wasn't lopsided anymore. In fact, it was carved all over with the most elaborate, elegant designs. And his steam bath deep soaker and sauna system was steamier and hotter than before. And his gnome Lily was just always in tune. And all the flowers in the garden bloomed brighter and fuller. And the leaves on the trees were greener and shadier. And there were bumper crops of berries and mushrooms. And all the fairy dust made Surly feel lighter and younger. And of course he didn't want them to go. Great tears slid down his cheeks as the fairies flew up and away, singing a fairy song in their fairy language that he didn't understand. And even though the fairies, even once full grown, were very small, and they ate only a very little bit, there were so many of them that Surly's pantry had gotten quite empty, especially since he'd been too busy to restock it. His shelves were bare. "But how can I host a Midsummer Night's Feast with so little?" wondered Surly. And just then, there was a knock on the door, and it was a female gnome who told Surly that her name was Daphiana Trefoil, and she delivered news that Midsummer Night's Feast was at her garden in 2 weeks' time, and she hoped he could make it. "He could," he said, "and thank you for the invitation." "If you don't mind me saying," Daphiana went on, tossing her long white braids over her shoulders, "you seem really down." And Surly told her about the gone fairies and the bare cupboard, and Daphiana asked, "Were you kind?" "Oh, I was," said Surly. "And did you listen deeply?" she asked. "Well, I listened, of course, but fairies don't speak gnome. They sing fairy songs, and who could know their meaning? And what's the point in listening to my empty pantry and apothecary shelves?" And Daphiana narrowed her eyes at Surly in a way that made him think he was missing something important. And he thought back to the fairies flying up and away while singing their fairy songs. And it's like he could still hear them singing if he thought about it. And he closed his eyes, because what a beautiful memory it was, really. And when he did, he realized he could understand fairy. And what they were singing to him was that if he ever needed help with anything at all, he should just ask. He could ask any twinkling star or any body of moving water, a creek or a fountain, and the fairies would hear him and help him if they could. So before bed that night, Surly looked up at the twinkling stars and asked for help from the fairies to restock his empty pantry and apothecary shelves. And sure enough, when he awoke, he found the fairies had been busy filling his shelves with all the things the Gnomonomicon said were needed. From heel speedy root to be well vine. Blackberries, strawberries, lingonberries, all manner of fairy cheeses and seed crackers, many types of root beer, including dandelion root beer, and even the things needed for another batch of fairies. "Do you think it could work to ask the fairies for help?" Do you think it would help you? I don't know if you believe in fairies. Maybe you don't because you haven't seen them. But I do. And it's true, I've never seen a fairy, so I can't know for sure. But many years ago, I asked the fairies for help finding children to tell my stories to when I was gazing at some twinkling stars. And I didn't hear any reply from the fairies, but here you are. So,